So now we're on 10:35,
verse 4,
159.
Self-reliance.
Let him carefully avoid all undertakings, the success of which depends on others, but let him eagerly pursue that accomplishment of which depends upon himself. Everything that depends upon others gives pain. Everything that depends on oneself gives pleasure. Know that this is the short definition of pleasure and pain. Just making this point is that dvijas, you know, specifically here the Brahmins, but the dvijas, then they're independent because the results that they get is dependent upon themselves. It means their endeavor. Of course, we understand the karma, that it's all up to the previous karma, and so therefore the Lord. The Lord sanctions, then we get. But the point being that it gets done because you do it. If you're waiting for someone else to do it for you, and therefore you'll get the result, that means then there'll be difficulty. So that's why then the dvijas must be independent, is that they must be able to do whatever needs to be done themselves. It means they can get others to assist, they can get, you know, to expand on that, but they can do it themselves and they're responsible for it. But if someone else is responsible, and then you'll get the result, but then it's very difficult. Does that make any sense? Like that. You know, because if you're always waiting for someone else to do something for you, then so many things are there, so many difficulties, so we'll always be in anxiety because we're not involved in it. If you're involved in it, you see it unfolding, you see the difficulties come up, you make your plans, you get around that, you continue. But if you're just waiting for it to happen, then it's always that you're waiting for someone else to do it, and you don't see what's going on in the process, so therefore you get frustrated because you figure it should happen immediately. But if you're involved in the process, then you see how it unfolds, so therefore you don't get frustrated because things are going, as something comes up that can cause frustration, you're dealing with it. But in the other one, you're not in control of it, so therefore you can't deal with any of the obstacles, so therefore it's frustrating. Does that make some sense? 42. Nonviolence. Let him never offend the teacher who initiated him, nor him who explained the Veda, nor his father and mother, nor any other guru, nor cows, nor Brahmins, nor any men performing austerities. Let him avoid atheism, caviling at the Vedas, contempt of the gods, hatred, want of modesty, pride, anger, and harshness. Let him, when angry, not raise a stick against another man. A wise man should therefore never threaten a Brahmin, nor strike him even with a blade of grass, nor cause his blood to flow. So one has to be very careful. Not to disturb anyone by the body, by the mind, or by the words. So by words he should never offend his superiors. Let him never by his mind then, think improperly towards the Veda or anyone or the deities who are the point of object of the Veda, or the Supreme Lord who is the Lord of the demigods, nor should he have the bad qualities, modesty, pride, anger, harshness, lack of modesty, pride, anger, and harshness, because these will then bring his pride to the such that he thinks he's independent. This is the whole point, is that one is independent in making endeavor, because activity is the most important thing, right? Means you must perform the proper activity. Just like we say, there's material activities, there's spiritual activities. But those depend upon your identity. So if you identify as material, then you do material activities. If you identify as spiritual, you perform spiritual activities. But the result of your identity and your desires is an activity. Does that make some sense? Then that activity will get you that desired what you are what it is that you want that's in connection with your identity. But the point is it's the endeavor that creates everything. Everything happens because of endeavor. So the whole social system happens, the whole economic system, the whole spiritual system, the whole, all aspects of rasa happen because we endeavor. If we don't endeavor, then it doesn't happen. This is the principle. It has to happen. So activity must be there. So that's the principle. Krishna is always trying to see that activity happen. If activity happens, then there can be interaction. If there's interaction, then there's rasa. Right? And that's what the soul is looking for. The actual goal of the soul is happiness. Right? Happiness comes from interaction. Right? So if that interaction is based on God consciousness, then we become satisfied. If it's based on material desire, then we don't become satisfied. Does that make some point? So the whole point is he's independent, therefore, to perform activities. But in the performance of his activities, he's dependent on God. Right? But he's not dependent upon another material situation. Whatever the situation is, he will perform his duties. Right? If there's some favorable facilities, he'll use those for Krishna's service. If there's no facilities, he'll still engage in Krishna's service. Does that make some sense? Therefore, he's independent. Right? Because he's not dependent upon material facility. But his independence actually means he's dependent upon God. That's his application of independence. Does this make some sense? Right? Because if that's there, then it will work. Right? Well, you see, then the materialist, he is dependent upon material situations for his happiness. And he is independent from God. Therefore, he's not happy. But when we're independent in material endeavor and dependent on the Lord, then we become satisfied. Right? Therefore, one can't have this pride, anger, harshness. One of modesty, then there's no humility. From that will come pride. From that, one will think that one's very special, so then there'll be anger. Right? Because you're special, then you don't get that specialness. Specialness just doesn't come. It doesn't happen here. Sometimes, now and again. But it doesn't last. You can't maintain it. Right? That's why there's intoxication. Right? Because people don't get what they want. So they turn to that because things just don't turn out the way they want them. Out of ignorance, they want them in a certain way. That ignorance is not fulfilled. So then they enhance that ignorance by intoxication. Then when they're angry, then causes harshness. Right? Then when the senses or the desires, the senses, or the emotions, anything material has been thwarted, then we become angry. When we become angry, we become harsh. Right? Because we'll see something as the cause of our anger, the cause of our not gaining what we want. So then we'll be harsh. So then that harshness, then we see, is then that can either be just through the words or the mind, or then what's pointing here is, because we've already dealt with the words in mind, is then the body. So one should not become violent. Right? So it says, therefore one should not threaten a Brahmin, nor even strike him with a blade of grass, nor cause his blood to flow. It means in no way should one threaten or cause trouble for a Brahmin. Like that. So that's the minimum. You know, ideally you cause no problem for anybody. Right? But at least this much, if you can't respect or be, you know, say harsh against others, then don't be harsh towards your superiors and don't be harsh towards Brahmins. Right? Then at least that much will start the seed that will grow where one can be properly situated. Does that make some sense? Here? So then the body, mind, and words then have to be engaged in peacefulness. So that means that there's not violence physically, because generally when we see non-violence, we think of the physical. But words also can be violent. And then the mind is the consciousness. If that is not God conscious, it is against the Veda or atheistic, that's also violence. Right? The Upanishad makes that point. Right? When one is not God conscious, then one doesn't accept the personalness of God or the soul. That's violence. That's violence against the soul. Because the soul, it should be happy, and its happiness means it's in relationship with the Lord. So to deny that relationship with the Lord by atheism, or to deny it by denying the soul, right? Then that's a problem, right? Because anger is also then denying the soul. Pride then is denying God, right?
Like that.
And want of modesty then here is that is material desire. So you get the karmi, the jnani, and the what's it? Vitaraga bhaya krodha, right? Raga bhaya krodha. So rag is anger, bhaya, fear. That will come from the pride, and krodha. I mean anger. Rag is attachment, want of modesty. Because it's just like you see someone who's not modest, then their attachments are so much that they're not modest, they can't be shy. Right? They immediately will go for whatever it is. Like that. So that's your raga. Bhaya then will be your pride. Because then you don't know who you are. You're proud. You know, so you don't know I am servant of Krishna. And then krodha. Then after that comes anger. When through karma and jnana you can't fulfill your desires, then one becomes angry. Right? That's the natural course. Okay, so that's clear on non-violence. What self-reliance is and non-violence? Right? No. Self-reliance means that you're for material situation, you're not dependent upon material situations to perform your service, but you're dependent upon the Lord. That's actual self-reliance. Right? And non-violence means by body, mind, and words, then all those three are not violent. So the body means you're not physically violent. The words, then you speak properly and all that, and respect your superiors and deal properly with others, with your equals, with your juniors, and but in mind that you are accept oneself as servant to the Lord, like that.
Yes. So everybody wants to talk about the fourth point of Srimad Bhagavatam, says that one who is dependent on material sense of others is degrading. So could you not?
Yeah, what we've said here, because you depend upon the others, then you the fulfillment of your desire, you know, material desire, depends upon situations and operating those situations that others create, and therefore then you're frustrated. So one has to be independent of that. Like that. One doesn't have desire in those areas that you don't have ability to operate. Because if you have desires outside of that, then one will become frustrated. So if one's frustrated, then naturally you give up performing your activities. Right? When you become frustrated, you don't want to do anything. So ignorance arises. Like that. You know, because of your passion, you can't get it, then there comes ignorance. So one's degraded. If one gives up desire in areas in which one doesn't have an ability to fulfill, then that raises one to goodness. So it's uplifting. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Walking the path of righteousness. Neither a man who lives unrighteously, nor he who acquires wealth by telling falsehoods, nor he who always delights in doing injury ever attain happiness in this world. Right? Means it may... Okay, it's explained. Let him, though suffering in consequence of his righteousness, never turn his heart to unrighteousness. for he will see the speedy overthrow of unrighteous wicked men. Unrighteousness practiced in this world does not at once produce its fruit, like a cow, but advancing slowly, it cuts off the roots of him who committed it. The punishment falls not on the offender himself, it falls on his sons. If not on the sons, at least on his grandsons. But an iniquity once committed never fails to produce fruit to him who wrought it. He prospers for a while through unrighteousness, then he gains great fortune. Next he conquers his enemies, but at last he perishes branch and root. Is that, we see that the process is happening there? Is that, see, anything that's coming good in this world has come from previous activities. So we have to be very careful not to get caught up in the idea is that the activity that we are performing is the one that's creating our happiness or distress right now. That will create for the future. What we're getting now is from the past. But it has to come through some medium. Does that make some sense? It's just like, let us say this. Okay, at the end, you've done your work for the week, and you have to get your money. So on Friday, you walk over to the cash counter, and then they give you your check, right? So now one could think, by my activity of walking over to the cash counter, I have gotten the fruits of that work in the form of this money. Yes? But can you just walk over the counter anytime you want and then they'll hand you a check? No. So your walking over the counter has nothing to do with that check. But if you don't walk over the counter, you won't receive the check. Does that make sense? So the point is you're performing your occupational duties, but they're not the cause of what you're gaining today. They're only the medium through which it comes. Right? You did your work sitting at your desk. Because you sat at your desk, there's a check there. But if you don't walk over to the cashier, you don't get the check. Right? So in previous life, we performed the activity. This life, it will come to it, but it comes to us through our prescribed duties. Does that make some sense? Like that. At the same time as, you know, that's at least the good stuff. The bad stuff has a way of finding us, you know, at all without any endeavor. So that's why it's saying is that since without endeavor you get bad, don't endeavor for good. You just endeavor to perform your duties properly to please the Lord. The good will come along just as the bad comes. You don't have to separately endeavor. Without endeavoring, you're getting the bad, so that means you don't have to endeavor to get it. Right? But you endeavor to perform your duties. And then whatever good or bad comes, that will just come. Does this make some sense? There would appear to be a contradiction here. Right? But the point is, as we pointed out in the beginning, activity is the thing that's being looked for. God's looking for activity, because activity then means things can be progressive. If there's no activity, it doesn't go anywhere. Right? That's like why Santa Rasa is not really considered a rasa, because nothing happens. Right? Maybe an appreciation, but that's it. It doesn't go farther. Does that make some sense? So the whole idea is because the other one's in servitude, then there's activity. Right? Friendship, parental, conjugal, there's activity. Therefore, it's considered good. Does that make some sense? Like that. So the activity is the thing. Therefore, Krishna, through our activities, gives the results of our good and bad action. Right? But the good and bad action is not, I mean, the activity we're doing now is not the cause of it. Right? So, therefore, you know, what does that got to do at this point? The point is that we see people who are performing unrighteous activities, and they're prospering. So then people will say, hey, it doesn't matter. It means they're doing nonsense, but they're getting a good result. And this person here is very religious. He's not getting a good result. But the whole point is you have to look at last life. So the person who's unrighteous this life means then where he's prosperous, he was pious in his last life. Right? And where he's sinful, that's where he was not careful. Right? And it's the opposite for the other person. Performance of his duties, he's righteous because he was righteous last life. But there was something he did wrong last life, therefore he's not prosperous. But by performing the righteous activities, because the fruit comes later, eventually he'll become, all good fortune will come to him. While for the sinful person, then the bad result will come. But depending upon how much good he's done, let us say he's done immense, vast, pious activities. So it may take 3 generations before the sinful activity catches up, because there's so much piety there. Right? So it may be that he prospers, his son prospers, his grandson prospers, and then the whole thing just dries up. But when it dries up, it dries up. It means that there's nothing left, just like Duryodhana. They prospered, they conquered their enemies, they did everything, it went great, and then one day, in 18 days, all finished, everything. Every last brother, their whole kingdom, everything, nothing left. So that's the point. Once it's done, then the result comes. Right? For the devotees, of course, then that's all in the hands of the Lord. So whatever we've done, we surrender to the Lord, then He will take care of it. Whatever we, you know, He feels it will be good for us, we'll get. Whatever He feels unnecessary, will then not happen. So it's in another question. But the point is we always have to be careful of this point of justice and not justice. Because otherwise we'll say people aren't just. Because of that we become angry. We become frustrated. But the point is if we're dependent upon them, then we're frustrated. Right? It means you have to get something done, but the result of that, we're not doing it for ourselves. Therefore we're not dependent upon them. Right? If you work on the platform Naish Karma, you're not dependent upon anyone. Because you're just trying to serve the Lord. If someone's there, you serve. Someone's not there, you serve. You get a result, you serve. You don't get a result, you serve. So you're actually independent because you're dependent on the Lord. So you're not actually dependent on others. Because otherwise, then, if you look at it, everybody's dependent upon others. The king on his ministers, on his army, on his treasury, on his... So that's why those things give him trouble. His ministers give him trouble. His army gives him trouble. His family gives trouble. His wealth gives trouble. All these give trouble. Right? But if he's just dependent upon the Lord, even though he has those, he has it, he doesn't have it, he's still happy. Yudhishthira is independent. Duryodhana is not. Duryodhana is dependent upon his kingdom for his happiness. Yudhishthira is not. Therefore, Yudhishthira sit as emperor, unrivaled emperor, or sitting in birch bark in the forest, then he's still happy. Does that make some sense? They come from means both will give those, you know, because wherever there's the Lord, then there's Lakshmi. So that means all these opulences are there. So opulence means that. So they can come from both. But generally we see those who are in aristocratic families and all this, some agyata sukriti has been done. Or some beginning of devotional service. You know, just beginning stages. They're not really focused or fixed, very stable in it. But the devotee doesn't want to perform devotional service for pious activities. You know, because then why... Means you're doing an activity that can give you the topmost result, and then you're trading it in on something not worthwhile. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. No, that would be just mundane piety, but they tend to be atheistic and those kind of things. So then the born of these lower. So they've done something, otherwise they wouldn't get that facility. It means without austerity, there is no gain. There's no gain. As your Prabhupada says, arts, that's, you know, it's it takes a lot of austerity to gain the arts. Because you have to do so much practice and repetition, very austere. But from that, then you get your result. So nothing's gained without austerity. If you look at it, anything. The more austere it is, the more result is gained. The less austere, the less result is gained. Does that make sense? So then anytime you see people with any of the oculus, means they've done something, pious or otherwise. But the difficulty comes is that if they then become proud of that, or by bad association or that, then they don't, you know, see properly towards the Veda, and like this, towards the Lord, then all that will be lost with time. They'll have it now, but it'll be lost. You know, like you see the people that have great beauty, but they use it for, you know, their own purposes, and they're very proud of it. Then in the future, they'll be very ordinary looking people, very ordinary. You know? And then from that austerity of, you know, being ordinary, people bothering this and that, it's very austere. And, you know, they're humble and all that, then in the future they'll be beautiful. You know, like that. So it just keeps going back and forth. So it doesn't really matter. It's not an important cycle. The important cycle is that if you're pleasing the Lord, then things are progressive. If you're not pleasing the Lord, you're not progressive. So that's the whole point of the whole discussion on pious and impious is simply to make the point that if the Lord is pleased, things are progressive. The Lord is not pleased, it's not progressive. That's all. That's actually what we're trying to get to. Does that make some sense? So then, conclusion of this, then. Let him always delight in truthfulness, obedient to the sacred law, conduct worthy of an Aryan, and purity. So these truthfulness, performance of one's duties, proper conduct, a proper character, and purity. Let him chastise his pupils according to the sacred law. Let him keep his speech, arms, and belly under control. Because if you keep these, then you get everything. The speaks, then also is connected to anger. Right? His arms means physically. You know, you don't deal roughly or that. And if the belly is kept under control, that means the tongue has to be kept under control, means the genital will be kept under control. So then all of those go in a line. Let him avoid the acquisition of wealth and the gratification of his desires if they are opposed to the sacred law. And even lawful acts which may cause pain in the future or are offensive to men. Like maybe the activity is lawful, but if it's going to disturb others, then one may not do that. You know, it's not a problem. It's just like, let's say you're walking through the Singapore airport and you want to wash your hands, and then there's the fountain there with a big pond, right? So now, according to the law, the amount of water that's there is actually by volume enough to be pure. Plus, it's moving, so it's purified. So technically, you could use it to wash your hands. But the people in the airport might take offense to that. Right? Well, if that was out, you know, in nature, then you would take advantage of the water. You know. Does that make some sense? So one has to judge. Like that. But at the same time, as one doesn't do anything that's against the law. Right? So that's where one has to find the balance. Right? And if he can gain wealth and fulfill his desires, but it's against the rules, against the law, then it's not good. Then it's not good. Or if it's sanctioned by the law, but in the future it will cause pain in the future, it should be avoided, right? Like eating of meat, right? Even if it's done in sacrifice, the animal is killed according to the law, But still, in the future, you'll have to be the animal, and the animal will be able to kill you. So it's going to cause trouble in the future. So if you're smart, you'll avoid that. Right? Because everything has its reaction. It may not be sinful, but it has a reaction. Does that make sense? Let him not be uselessly active with his hands and feet, or with his eyes, nor crooked in his ways, nor talk idly, nor injure others by deeds or even think of it. Because if you're useless with your hands and feet, then one is restless, it disturbs others, people don't take you seriously. And you may find that you do things that are maybe disturbing to others, like when you're just sitting there on the lawn and you just start pulling out grass. That's a disturbance to the grass. You're not doing any service by pulling out the grass. Right? So it's a disturbance to others. Or you pick up dirt clods and break them into pieces. There's bugs living in there. You know, then you kill bugs and other things. So therefore it's useless. And you disturb others. So it should be, just in general, the principle is that the Brahma never does anything that's useless. If the activity is not going to give some good result, according to Shastra, he doesn't do it. Like that, doesn't waste his time. Nor with his eyes. He shouldn't just be looking here and there at anything, because you can get yourself in trouble. You look too many places, at wrong place, wrong time. You know, somebody's always going to say, what are you looking at? No, nothing. You know, so then, you know, you want to avoid that. Nor talk idly, just useless talk. In other words, he does nothing with his body, with his eyes, with his talk. Crooked in his ways means what he does should be straightforward. His dealings should be straightforward. And he shouldn't injure others by deeds or even thinking of it. He shouldn't even think of violence towards others, because thinking of it then eventually will result in violence, physical violence. You know, Prabhupada mentions that people, they have these weapons, they have to use them. You know, they can't not use them because they have them, and there's always the idea to use them. So in the same way, they're always thinking of bad things, of what one's going to do to others. Then at some point, one's going to do something bad to others. Maybe not exactly as you thought, but at least in that direction. It'll move in that direction. Let him walk in that path of holy men which his fathers and grandfathers followed. While he walks in that, he will not suffer harm. Yeah, so in other words, the holy men, they have tread the path, and then the fathers, grandfathers, they are following in that path. So if one is from a family where they are following like this, then that is followed. If not, then that association of devotees, then what they are doing and what their persons that they revere are doing, we follow that. Or it can also mean what, you know, the spiritual master, the acharyas, and what the previous acharyas, what they do, like that. We follow that. Does that make some sense? In other words, means our superiors, who are our superiors following that, and our superior superiors. That path, then, is what we should be following. We do that, then we'll never fall into trouble. Right? One may say that difficulties may arise, but if we don't have that attachment, you know, because the virtuous behavior means that it's done without attachment, right? Then one will not suffer any harm, right? Because one may look at it, no, there's pious people that mentioned just before in the verses before. These persons, he's unrighteous, but he's suffering. And the other person is unrighteous, and he's not suffering. So therefore, then this verse, while he walks in that, he will not suffer harm. Walks in that meaning the path of the holy man. But this person is righteous and he's suffering. But if he's suffering, it's because of attachment. So that's not the path of the holy man. He may be performing the customs and the piety that they are, but he's not accepting the mentality. You know? So his body, maybe his words, or just his body, but his mind is not there. Does that make some sense? So in other words, you can see from this is these are the keys, the hidden ones, is the karmakanda, and jnanakanda can't be the thing, it's only bhakti. Right? So only naishkarmya is the real path. Because that's the only path where, even if there's something going wrong, it's still right. Because if, without attachment, then you perform your duties, and what result comes, good or bad, that's not our problem. We're not distressed by it. We simply try to do our best to get the best result, because the result's for God. Right? It's just like if you're cooking for someone that you like, you're going to try your best to make it the best preparation, even though it's not for you. Right? Does that make sense? So out of affection for the Lord and the devotees, therefore we try our best to do our service nicely so that they get the best results. Then the result that comes, that's up to the Lord. He's in control, not us. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Bearing offense without resentment. Okay, so this before was that we just do right, not wrong, and bear with the results that come here. Okay, so that's how you say, you know, it's indirect. Right? We're just doing our activities, whatever comes. We should follow good activities, not bad activities. Right? But now, what about that we're doing the good and bad's coming? Or something we don't deserve is coming. Right? You know what I'm saying? Seemingly. Of course, everything can be taken back. But so that's dealing with that. With an officiating or domestic priest, with a teacher, with a maternal uncle, a guest, and a dependent, with infants, aged and sick men, with learned men, with his paternal relatives, connections by marriage and maternal relatives, with his father and his mother, with female relatives, with a brother, with his son and his wife, with his daughter and with his servants, let him not have quarrels. He avoids quarrels with these persons, he will be free from all sins. Hence, if one is offended by any of these, one must bear it without resentment. So that means all these persons, even if they, one should not fight with them, even though they've acted in a way that's not proper, or they've offended us, or you know, in some way slighted us, or like that. Then these persons we should not fight with. We should not quarrel. Because if we are, then one's freed from all sin. Right? Because the idea is that we must give up being disturbed by anybody. Right? Mana dana means not desiring respect for ourselves, but we're giving to others. Right? We're not desiring. So, at least minimum, these persons, we should be like that. It should be everybody, every living entity were like that. But minimum, right? So that's the Vedic culture sets the minimum. It's all these qualities must be there. Humility, tolerance, that. But at least in these areas you should be humble, or you should be tolerant here, or you should respect others, like here before. At least you have to respect, you know, your gurus, your mother, the father. These you must respect, right? You should respect bigger than that, but at least that minimum. So in the same way is that one is not desiring respect from these persons, and even if one is dealt with wrongly, still one doesn't create quarrel. Right? So we see these are all the officiating or domestic priest, the teacher, maternal uncle, guest here. Well, it means any guest, but guest here specifically means qualified Brahmin guest, you know, who comes. Right, then, so that group. Then you have all those who just are not mature or are affected by so many different things. Right? Right? Dependent, infants, aged, sick men. So they may do things that are. The king also is not to get disturbed, even though people, these ones, you know, make cases against or do things. He doesn't take offense. Right? Learned men. Then that goes in with the senior people. These others are close. This is just in general. Paternal relatives and any of the relatives outside of that. Connections by marriage and maternal relatives. You know, then because you have so many. Then father and mother, like that. Female relatives. Brother, son, his wife, and his daughter, and his servants. Let him not have quarrels. is it to avoid heart problems? Oh, we have had. I was just thinking, is that, you know, because I was going to say, is it in sick? Does it have to do with they have heart problems? I was thinking, oh, I guess, yeah, they're sick. If we have had problems with them, one can be more careful. It depends upon what the thing is, but etiquettes are still followed, and if it's still we're in that service that we have to interact with them, then we should interact properly. We don't have to interact more than that. We don't have to go out of our way to act beyond that. It's just what must be done is done, and that's it. But it should be done properly. It shouldn't be done with an attitude or, you know, trying to let them know that you're not pleased and like that. You just do your duties, and that's it. And don't interface with them more than that. You know, that's all. Only that much. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's always there. That's why one finds like-minded persons and works more closely with them, like that. But in one service, one may have to work with a very broad variety of persons. So one should be able to do that. That is considered the very, you know, a mature and balanced person. But as far as your intimacy and your closeness and like that, then you choose who that is, you know, with time and experience. And yeah. Had something. Okay. Qualified and unqualified charity. Though by his learning and his sanctity he may be entitled to accept presents, let him not attach himself too much to that habit. For though he is accepting many presents, the divine light in him is soon extinguished. Light means if you take more than what you can. In other words, he's saying delight in them, or attach himself too much. That means he'll go out of his way to get more than what he can actually handle. Because with anything free comes karma. Right? So therefore, then, it's natural, it means amongst friends, but this means charity. You know, out of affection you give a gift, that's another thing. But charity being given. And that's that charity then carries with it the mentality of the person. Yeah, yeah, you're giving gifts and presents and all those, because that's another thing. No, it's like that. But the point is it's one shouldn't. It's meaning here as an occupation, and that's how you maintain yourself. Is that you do that? So that's why you see Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, they don't accept gifts. You know, it can be a gift as, you know, one king to another out of respect or appreciation or like that. But it's not that they're just giving charity or something like this, you know. So it's very careful. Like you see many times Arjuna just wouldn't accept things. That he's done something for someone, he won't accept it. Because one is that means then he's done the activity with the idea of getting results. So he won't take it, otherwise it looks like he's doing it for a result. You know, just like the boy... Like the girl side of the family generally never accepts much or doesn't accept gifts and other things from the boy side of the family. Because then it will look like that because the daughter is being given, they're getting gifts. So to avoid that, then they don't. They always reciprocate everything. Something's given, then something's given back. But the girl side can give to the boy side. Right? Because that's just the affection. Because the girl goes there, so therefore then opulence goes with it. Because the girl is Lakshmi, so therefore, you know, opulence can flow that way. But it doesn't flow the other way, otherwise it looks like business. Does that make sense? So Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, they don't accept charity as an occupation. Like that, Brahmins can, but they shouldn't go out of their way to just collect more and more and make themselves wealthier and wealthier. Otherwise, they won't be able to handle the reactions like that. A Brahmin who neither performs austerities nor studies the Veda, yet delights in accepting gifts, sinks with the donor into hell, just as he who attempts to cross over in a boat made of stone is submerged in water. When you try to go in a stone boat, you go down pretty fast. So here it means the donor and the donee both go. He's unqualified. In other words, that's why charity is given to qualified Brahmins, to the deities, qualified Brahmins, qualified projects. So otherwise, it's given to someone who's not, then both go down. You know, needy, you know, things like that. That's one thing one's giving. But one's giving a small amount. It's not out of respect. But if one's giving to unqualified Brahmins, people who present themselves as qualified, as sadhus and that, then it's a problem. It means, because both will go. Yeah. A wise man should constantly discharge the paramount duties called yama, but not always the minor ones called niyama. For he who does not discharge the former while he obeys the latter alone becomes an outcast. Right? So all this is dealing with deception. So to perform secondary duties and leave primary, that's also deception. Like that. You know? So in other words, if the principle isn't being obtained, but you're performing a detail of that principle, but it doesn't give you that principle, then that's useless. So the principle always has to be performed. Right? Then, if details can also be performed to enhance that, it's done. Does that make sense? You know, like if you have your rice, you have your sabjis, then you put some lemon, you put some achar, some salt, some pepper. It enhances it. But if we just bring you a plate that has some salt, some pepper, a chili, some achar, you know, and say, here's lunch, then it's kind of like, hey, there's no substance. You know what I'm saying? And if there's nothing else to eat, then yes, okay, you're sitting down eating, you know, a bottle of achar, okay. But that's only because there's nothing else to eat. But if there's a proper meal and you're just eating achar, then that's not good. Does that make some sense? So that one has to see that one's duties was always getting the results. The gods, having considered the respective merits of a niggardly Strotriya and of a liberal Urser. Urser means a money lender. So even you know, since ancient times, you know, millions of years, and money lenders are always seen as lowest of the low, right? Like that. You know, I think, what is it? Jesus, one of his disciples, was a money lender. Very wealthy, very prosperous, but it's just they're considered low class. He even said, you know, you're a saintly person, how could you come into our house even? Just because we're considered so low class. Like, okay. The gods, having considered the respective merits of a niggardly Strotriya, means one who is miserly, right? Doesn't give much. And of a liberal Urser, declared the food of both to be equal in quality. The Lord of created beings, Prajapati, came and spake to them, "Do not make that equal which is unequal. The food of that liberal Urser is purified by faith. That of the other man is defiled by want of faith." Let him without tiring always offer sacrifices and perform works of charity with faith. For offerings and charitable works made with faith and with lawfully earned money procure endless rewards. Right? So if it's done with faith, then you get a result, even if one is not very qualified. But if one is very qualified, but the activity is performed without faith, it won't give us a result. Right? It's not equal. It's not considered equal. So here, work done with faith and with lawfully earned money. You know, according to what is your occupational duties, money gained by that, you use that for the Lord's service. then you get very good results. Let him always practice according to his ability, with a cheerful heart, the duty of liberality, means charity, both by sacrifices and by charitable works, if he finds a worthy recipient for his gifts. So it either means you perform sacrifices and have, you know, special programs, and this way then invite, you know, qualified people and give charity to them. In other words, through the sacrifice you're able to give charity. Or, and it says, and by charitable works, meaning giving to those who are needy, those who need, you know, Brahmins in need, other needy persons, or even just the poor, and the, you know, the, those who are suffering. The main thing is that it's, you know, the focus is on those who are qualified, because that's really where you get the benefit. And those who are just needy, you know, you give a rupee, you get back a rupee, like that. Yeah. But the others, you give one rupee, you get back 100,000, like that. Then if you give to the devotees, then it's unlimited. So always one says, if one finds somebody worthy. If one doesn't find anyone worthy, one doesn't give him charity. But it doesn't mean now he takes that money and enjoys it. No, that's kept. It's known. It's for charity. But you wait, and when somebody worthy comes along, then it's given to that. Worthy project, given to the Lord, given to the devotees, like this. If he is asked, let him always give something, be it ever so little, without grudging. For a worthy recipient will perhaps be found who saves him from all guilt. Means if a worthy recipient asks him, then he should always give, even if he doesn't have money, just something, because then he'll be benefited, because that person may save him, you know, may be the cause of his upliftment. You know, you've given something in charity to somebody who's very qualified, and then because of that, you'll be uplifted. Does that make some sense? So in other words, charity to qualified persons should always be given without grudging, like that, you know. Others, then, you always have to check. In other words, one always has to check the worthiness of who you're giving to. You know, even a beggar, they have to be properly behaved beggar that's going to use the money properly. You know. Oh, one of them is that they don't come up and beg from you and, you know, pull on your arm and harass you and this and that. Those ones you're not really obligated to give to. They're sitting properly, they're respectful, then those you can give. Like that. Because they're in the right attitude. The ones that are coming harassing is business. You know, they may, their profession may be begging, but that's not our business. Our business is to give charity. If you want to give this charity to, you know, charitable works, then that's to people who actually need it. So a person who will just sit there and be respectful, then that generally means they need it. Because they can't do anything else, so they're humble. The ones who are out and they're aggressive, then many times it's either they're uncultured, they may be needy, but they're uncultured. Or it's just their profession. Does that make sense? Like in Puri, probably to make all the beggars sit down. They wanted money, they all had to sit down. And just be quiet, you know? And then just accept what they're giving. But if they're up and hey, give, probably never give them. Tell them to all sit down. Yeah, but still, you make them all sit down. Because they're not to come up and be aggressive. It's not. That's not the nature of that occupation. Begging means is humility. You accept whatever you're given. So you don't come up and harass. You know. And especially you never touch. You know, touching is just not allowed. You know. Previously beggars have never touched you. Now they will. Now they've never touched you. They never touch you. Okay, now of gifts. A giver of the Veda, Brahman, obtains union with Brahman. The giver of the Veda surpasses all other gifts of water, food, cows, lands, clothes, sesame, gold, and clarified butter. So of all gifts that one can give, this knowledge of the Veda is the best. It's always the best. And then these others, as people, as required or needed, those can be given. But that's why the preaching of Krishna consciousness, that's the best charity. You know, it's the greatest welfare work. So it says, give your food. And I think this, you know, here, food is good. But better than that is the Veda. Right? So if you can give both, then you do both. But it should be understood the Veda is the highest. So preaching, distributing the books, these things, these are the highest welfare work. Samkirtan, Harinam. For whatever purpose a man bestows any gift, for that same purpose he receives in his next birth with due honor its reward. Right, so whatever the gift and whatever your purpose, that's what you'll get in the next life. So in other words, you can't be doing it for mundane and then at the same time you figure you're going to get the other and get devotion. You know what I'm saying? The guy's giving charity and you go to the program and everyone respects him and he's looking very religious and all that. It's touted as it's very religious and pious, but same, he's only doing it for recognition. Right? So that means he'll get that result and be recognized, but he won't be the religious aspect he won't get. Because that's not actually his purpose. Does that make sense? Let him not be proud of his austerities, let him not utter a falsehood after he has offered a sacrifice. Let him not speak ill of Brahmins, though he be tormented by them. When he has bestowed a gift, let him not boast of it. Right? These four shouldn't be done, because they will, by doing those things, these are the points that will cut the result of that. By a falsehood, a sacrifice becomes vain. You know, by making it bigger and more special than it was, then you lose the result of that sacrifice. You've done it, but by speaking falsely about it to others, then you'll lose the result. By self-complacency, the reward for austerity. So by pride, yes, I did this, I did that, I stood on my toes for 10,000 years. And then you'll lose the result. Say again? Yeah, it means you perform the sacrifice, but you know you make it bigger than it was. You know, it's just like in the West, you know, the fish every time you tell the story gets bigger. So we tell about the sacrifice every time it gets bigger. You know, more devotional, more yes. You know, when Agni personally came out of the fire and this and that, and you know, like this, then you know you lose the result. In other words, these are the things that one naturally will want to do. Longevity by speaking ill of Brahmins. If you speak ill of the Brahmins, then you shorten your life. Like that. And the reward of a gift by boasting. You know, you tell it how, you know, charitable you are and how this and how that and how religious. Then you lose the result. So in other words, these things will just cut those activities. So sacrifice, austerity, charity, right, those must be performed. But they're lost by these activities. And then in that, because that is, those are so essential, and just by doing this you lose it, the same way also then this point with Brahmins, because Brahmins must be respected. If they're disrespected, then one's life is shortened. Any questions on this? Yes.
Could you further explain the relationship between tangible, intangible results and progression?
Tangible, intangible, and progression. Could you define what's tangible, what's intangible, and what's progression?
For example, when one is engaged in preaching work, and tangible result would be that a person chants Hare Krishna. The intangible result we see is that in the heart is cleansed. But if we're looking for results in terms of progression in fulfilling our hearts and desires and cleansing our own hearts, etc., how can we measure the intangible, tangible results in light of the progression and results?
See, one also has to know how to measure. See, because the difficulty comes is that perception has to be able to go beyond the senses. Otherwise, your intangible results you can't grasp. So the difficulty comes is you have to be very careful, because like modern education is always geared towards a perceptible result. But so you can turn it into that, but the point is to be able to see that observation, that perceivable observation, is actually connected to that activity. That takes subtlety. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, if you can only perceive the five gross senses and not the three subtle, then you can't actually be progressive. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, then you'll always just be on the platform of anamoya. Because that's science. Science is it's perceivable directly. You can mathematically calculate it. But when it goes into the mind, the intelligence, the ego, you can't calculate it. So therefore, that's where science ends. And it goes into gross science, then it goes into the subtle sciences. Right? You have to be able to see dharma and moksha to be able to perceive what's beyond that. Does this make some sense? So that is there. So then that those formulas, those are Vedic formulas that you can see. The heart is purified. So how is the heart purified? Then you can see is in some result, let's say, giving up desire for certain material activities or certain association or certain sense gratification. You can see that. That's the result. So then you can understand the heart's being clean. Okay? So one has to be able to know that path. Then, so you can perceive it, because everything should be able to be brought down to perception. But you have to know the path between Shabda and Pratyaksha. Right? Otherwise, if you don't know, then you're just going from what you perceive to what you perceive. So then it's not very elevated. Knowledge is there, but then it's speculative, because it's not actually practical. Does that make sense? So something perceptible is there, but one has to know what is that based on. Why is that perception good? Otherwise, you could say any perception, but why that particular one? It has to be in line with Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Then that's the right perception to get from that activity. Right? Does that make some sense? Just like, okay, Let's say, okay, now if one preaches, then one's respected. So one is not looking for, okay, my preaching's successful because I'm being respected. That's not what we're looking for. Right? But it's part of the thing, because we know that when people actually understand the philosophy, then they respect the devotees. They respect those who are senior to them. Right? And of all things that one can be given, the Veda is the most important. So someone who teaches you in the Veda, then they're to be respected. So if they're respecting, that means it's their good quality. So in other words, then the real thing is to see is that person's respectful. By your preaching, they're becoming respectful towards the devotees. Not that I am getting respected.
So that behavior is the byproduct of the purification.
Yeah, that but it's the purification. But the purification means it's coming from knowledge. is from knowledge, then there's purity. And by performing devotional activities, because it's in contact with the Lord, then one is purified. So that means you're purifying the subtle body, that their identity is coming more in line with Krishna consciousness. So they identify themselves more as devotees. They're using their intelligence more in the Lord's service. Their values are devotional. Right? Now you can look at it in men and money, which is important because you get things done that way. But that perception is the first perception, and it's specifically the perception for those whose only concept is men and money. Right? Like you see, up to 75, Prabhupada made the push to double it. And so the whole push was on men and money. How many devotees made, how much temples open, how many books distributed. It was all by numbers, because the whole American culture is just money and power and these kind of things. So you take those people, then they can be motivated by this method. But now they're being motivated to do this for Krishna, so then they go out and work very, very hard. Then when they're focused and they're completely steady in that, then Prabhupada said, now you start to go for the subtle. Now you have to increase the quality. Right? Now boil the milk. Okay, now you have the men, but is the false ego, the intelligence and the mind being properly used? Are their values changing? Do they identify as servants of Krishna? Right? Are they using their intelligence to understand the Krishna conscious philosophy and apply it? Right? So that's the next stage. So in the beginning, then that can be used, the gross can be used for when the perception is gross. But when the perception becomes purified, then one should be able to see that. So then the result of gross perception result for Krishna should be that then comes to subtle perception result. Right? The gross will still be there, but the focus changes. Now you're making the devotees so that they will be like this. Not that I'm making a devotee because War Temple makes more devotees. So it's a nice competition, and it's great because you're making devotees, it's always good. But when it comes to just the purpose of making devotees is then our temple is more, respected and prosperous and everything than another temple, then money just becomes your thing and respect. Then when you don't get respect, you lose your enthusiasm. And then since money is the thing, then whatever it takes to get money, why sell books? We'll sell stickers. Right? BTG, doesn't get distributed anymore. Right? I mean, devotees don't distribute BTG. BTG has to distribute itself. Right? So they thought of newer ways to do it. Because the point is to get money, not to sell, not to distribute the books. You understand? Point is, distributing books gets money. You perform your occupational duty, you get money. Right? The Brahmin teaches, he does yajnas, he does puja. That's his purpose. From that, he gets money. But if his purpose is just to make money, then why do that? Something else makes more money. Like one Ayurvedic doctor, he had so many sons. And he had one boy there, wasn't, okay boy, wasn't that sharp. And then one day it was understood that this was his nephew. We asked him, well, how come your sons aren't doing this? And the doctor says, my sons told me, he says, what you make in 1 year by doing your Ayurvedic practice as a Brahmin, we, by doing business, make in 1 month. So why should we practice Ayurveda? Because their purpose is money. So they either buy from the father, or from the community, or just whatever it is, that money is the important thing. So if money is the important thing, then why you should perform this duty? Because money, you know what I'm saying? And then it all just falls apart. So the men and the money and the temples, that's important, because that means it's prosperous. It means you're preaching. Because if you're preaching, people join. If people join, then money is there, because activities are there, and so much. When you preach, then automatically Lakshmi is there. So if you have men and money, it's one of the ways to test, is preaching going on? Does that make sense? You know, it's like here, you see every morning, there's 20, 30 new bhaktas. As long as I've been here in Mayapur since the 70s, there's always 30 new bhaktas. You know what I'm saying? And they go through, what is it, 6 week or 6 months, I don't know. Yeah. 3 months. Every 3 months, it's new faces. So that means every year they make hundreds and hundreds of devotees. Why? Because they have so many book stalls here, they have preaching programs going on, so many school programs, they got 6 buses out distributing books, that's all they do. So preaching is going, therefore there's devotees. Right? Therefore things are developing. Right? But then that's the first thing. Then you know what's going on because you can see the gross. Then you look at the subtle. Okay, now the devotees are there, but what's the caliber of those devotees? Are they being trained? Are they becoming Krishna conscious? Are they becoming fixed? Does that make some sense? So then by studying, you know what is the connection between one and the other. Does that make some sense? You know, so it's like that. Just like, you know, you're Krishna, you cook nicely for Krishna. So if you cook nicely for Krishna, then you see the consciousness and the whole temple goes up. So that's the subtle. The gross is that the offerings went on and everybody got fed. Nobody's starving. Right? That's the tangible. The other is that by taking Krishna prasad that has good consciousness, the consciousness of the devotees is going up. If it's going up, you can tell the consciousness is good. If it's going down, it means it's not good. You know, the cook's just doing it because they cook and then they get a job. They get paid, they get the facility. That's all. You know, they'd rather cook for the devotees because cooking for the colonies is a trip. But otherwise, they'd be cooking, it doesn't matter. You know, they're a cook, so they're going to cook. Or they'll open their own restaurant or business. Right? Does that make some sense? So then that's how you can tell. You know, you have a teacher. Teacher's teaching. Okay. That teacher's teaching. Now, the kids are learning the subject matter, but they're not becoming more Krishna conscious and they're not developing any character. Right? So that means the teacher's teaching because they're getting paid. You know what I'm saying? But now, if they're teaching to teach, and because they're doing the duties, automatically they get paid, then you see those kids, the character and everything comes up. So that's the intangible. Right? It's because of the consciousness of the teacher. When the consciousness of the teacher is good, everything goes up. Consciousness is not good, it doesn't go up. Does that make sense? Like that. So everything has its gross and subtle. Because gross comes from subtle. So to get the gross means there must be a subtle, the subtle first. So depending upon what is the subtle, then that gross will have different effects. Right? It's just like you have 10 people doing the same job, but they all have different values why they may be doing it. You know? So therefore then you get different results. Does that make any sense?
One example, the Prabhupada gives us the proportion of greed and lust.
The proportion that you're free from lust. Yeah, because then that's attaching to the material energy. So that means then you think you're less the controller. It means the more less means the more you're the controller. Less means the more you think I'm serving Krishna. That's a good one. As a prophet, so expert, just picking just a point. You know? That's Shruti. Anything else? Yes. No. Means you try, and if they respond, nice, and if they don't respond, then you don't bother. But the point is I mean, that's on the, you know, the point of it, like the tattva aspect, your relationship with them. And the meaning of that, ultimately, they're not the parents. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like, they're not the parents of the soul. The soul is you. They're the parents of your conditioned nature. But that's illusion. That's you know, it doesn't have any substance. So at that point, if it's no facility, then you just pull back to the other. You know? That by the Shastra and by Guru, then it actually establishes we are reborn back into the spiritual world. Right? We're reborn into our spiritual consciousness. But if they're favorable, then we can always help. But it always means we're respectful and we don't get, you know, worried about being insulted by them. But that doesn't mean that if they're not Krishna conscious, we follow what they say. Just like Prahlad Maharaj was always respectful to his father. But it didn't mean he followed what he said. You know, if it was un-Krishna conscious. You know, but in ordinary dealings, you know, he's time to go to bed and time to get up and, you know, things like that, you know, then that's standard, that's ordinary dealings. So that's proper. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, oh, best of the demons. Very respectful. You know, it's just like, we laugh at it because we think it's an insult, but to the demons, then that's what they call themselves. They are called the Asuras. That's their group. You know? Like that. Yeah. But it goes both ways. Means if the other person doesn't trust you that much, you don't have the right to do that for them. Because until they trust you like you trust yourself, then only you can use those methods that you use on yourself on them. So until that happens, then you can't do that. Otherwise, then that's our definition of friendship, and then it's self-centered. It's not equal, because it's our definition. Well, they will have their definition, so it's got to meet. So that's there. And also in Krishna consciousness, yeah, it means this in general, but in Krishna consciousness, you know, our friends are coming from so many different kinds of backgrounds and that as devotees, we are together as friends. But if we weren't devotees, there's a good chance these individuals wouldn't come together. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, because you're dealing with so many different groups, and there's a commonality here with this one, and there's a commonality with that one, but these two then have a commonality that you don't have with them. You know? or the opposite, you know, something uncommon. So these things may come up. So it's never good amongst devotees to take so much to take sides and stuff like that. You know? No one tries to help and support and all that. No one tries to avoid it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, to that proportion they trust, to that proportion then you can, you know, deal with, you know, their value system and be stronger with them or more, expect more from them. Like that. That's the thing, is the closer they get, then it becomes more objective. Or, you know, that means in this and that you're dealing with them. You know, seeing their faults and this and that, and able to deal with them because they trust you, so you can do that. And the less, then the more it's just you deal with the externals. You know, in other words, if they don't have the trust, then the basic rules have to be followed, that's all. But as the trust is there, then you can get in the mentality that's behind whether they follow or not the rules. You know. That's the thing. It means you can explain it in general to get inspire them to follow the rules, but you wouldn't make it specific dealing with themselves. That only if they have that trust, then you can deal with their particular value system. You know, where you're trying to help them make that decision directly. But otherwise, if not, then it's general. You talk about that this value system will give this result, that value system will give that result, so therefore better to take that one, but it's still up to them to make the choice. If they make the right choice, then they stay in the educational system. If they don't, then they don't. You know, if they're your children, then you're kind of more stuck with them. You know? So that's the whole point, is that but if you perform your occupational duties, that will develop the trust. That's the whole point in the Vedic system. If occupational duties are performed, trust is gained. Because everybody's doing what they should be doing and it's stable. So therefore you know who they are, you know what you can get. You know what the interaction is, so therefore you can trust. You know, it's like the Brahmin doesn't have material desire. You know, they don't have greed and these kind of things. Therefore they can go into any house at any time. They don't have to, they can just walk in. They can go into any part of the house. They can deal with anybody in the house. They can talk on any subject. They can deal with anything because you know that they're doing it for your benefit only. Or at least in general, generically, that you're following the Shastra. Maybe not you in specific, but in general as a, you know, citizen of the, you know, world, the universe. Does that make sense? Like that. So therefore, then, and they always do it, then you trust. You know, but if they take advantage, then there won't be trust. That taking advantage wouldn't be their occupational duty. You know, the king always protects, always is just, then you trust. So then when he does give punishment, it's accepted. But if he gives punishment according to what's good for him, then nobody trusts and nobody accepts his punishment. Like that. So that's the key, is performance, clarity of occupational duties and performance of it is social sanity. Then there's trust. There's all the talk nowadays of love and trust, but there's absolute independence by everybody and no one has any responsibility. So there can never be any love and trust. Absolutely none. The more independent people become, the less there is. The more dependent, the more there is. Like that. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Sarvavetā Bhaktivinoda ki, Janitai Gaura Premanandi.